Support for the Media Project comes from the College of St. Rose, Albany, New York, offering a Master of Arts in Communications to advance careers in media, PR, and journalism. Full or part-time options, 518-454-5143. From Northeast Public Radio, this is The Media Project, a weekly discussion about issues confronting the media.
Oh, newspapermen meet such interesting people. They know the lowdown, now it can be told. I'll tell you quite reliably off the record about some charming people I have known. For I meet politicians and grafters by the score, killers plain and fancy, it's really quite a bore. Oh, newspapermen meet such interesting people. They wallow in corruption, crime, and gore. Ting-a-ling-ling, city desk, pull the press, extra, extra, read all about it, it's a mess, meets the test. Oh, newspapermen meet such interesting people. It's wonderful to represent the press.
Okay, everybody is happy here. We'll see how happy you guys are by the time the program is over. I'm Ira Fussfeld of the Daily Freeman of Kingston, New York, and welcome to the Media Project. And this week, we are going to have a special show because we're going to have the newspaper people dominate the show. The broadcasters are not here. Mr. Smith has not gone to WAMC and the network today because he's ill. So we have Mike Spain of the Albany Times Union back with us and Judy Patrick of the Schenectady Gazette. And this is going to be a show where the real stuff is going to be told.
Finally.
Finally. And everybody is going to have a high energy level because we've got Mr. Shartok, who is on vacation. I don't know how that happened. He is allowed to have a vacation, I suppose. So we're going to we're really going to dig in and find some media stuff, to use the technical word, to talk about. And we do have one letter that I'll briefly review because I think we can address it rather quickly. We have a letter from Bill, who is wondering, should media, in reporting alongside current happenings, provide historical and contextual information? For example, the discussions about the economy, a contextual might include the fact that CEOs in 1980 made 64 times the income of their individual workers, et cetera, et cetera. So he's basically saying the media should provide this kind of context, to which you editors, I think, will say,
well, how does he know that? He probably read it in the media. I mean, I've heard that. I've read that. It's part of the conversation. The ratio between CEOs' wages and that of the average worker at a company is frequently cited and mentioned in economic reports. You know, a lot of people think that because we don't constantly repeat one aspect of a story, we're not telling it in its full context. You know, we do have to move on and tell a lot of different stories. But generally, I think we do a really good job of that.
Right. Providing context is one of the things every newspaper story or every story should include. We can't go back 300, 400 years, but we do touch upon the issues that are relevant to that particular story at a time. It's something we strive for. Obviously, we could always put a little bit more context.
Well, and to be fair, there are stories where context is not included, but those are more likely to be breaking stories or stories where you really haven't had yet the time to get that context. But the goal is to do it. You want to inform your readers as best you can. So I'm not sure whether Bill has had a bad experience looking for context, but it seems to me it's part of what we do, and it is in newspapers, and as best we can do it.
Well, a lot of people get their news by reading the little trailer along the bottom of the screen, or they'll look at just the headlines on their mobile app or something, and you can't get context in those. You got to open up the story, and you have to read it.
Well, I'll tell you what you can get from that. You can get a headache from that. If you try, I mean, even if you have a large screen TV, and by that I mean a large screen TV, so that there's a room for the crawl, and there's room for the main picture, and then there's room for three or four boxes with talking heads off to the side, and then there's the other thing with identifying. What do you look for first? If I didn't need glasses, I would need glasses.
And the other thing is, you can't get much context in a tweet.
In a tweet, well,
tweet, right?
Well, tweet is the new AP. Do we disagree with that, or we don't want to give tweeting that much credit yet?
Well, it gets the word out quickly. Sometimes it gets it out of context, and sometimes it gets it wrong.
And sometimes it's very repetitive.
That's right, over and over. But you know, it was flowing big on election night this year. So.
Well, let's talk about something that's fresh in the news as we speak and apparently isn't going to go away too soon, and that's this whole controversy regarding David Petraeus, the general and now former CIA director. And we don't need to get into all the specifics of the events that have led to his departure from the public scene, but the broader media question is, he seems to have gotten many people would say, a more sympathetic treatment in the media than others might. And the suggestion is that's because when Petraeus was a general, in particular, I suspect less so at the CIA, he was very cooperative with, collegial with the press, and thus the press was less inclined to really go after him. And I guess I don't think any of us knows that specifically because we're not there, but let's take that as a given. Is that surprise you if that's what happened?
Well, you know, a lot of public officials and politicians, you know, make themselves available to the press and engage conversations with reporters. And it does suggest that the reporting of the Petraeus case suggests that they may have given him more favorable coverage. They may have given him a bye because they say he was accessible. He called reporters back. He let them ask follow-up questions, which was very much out of the culture of the military. In fact, one report said that other military officers were uncomfortable with the way that he was so open with the press, but he had superstar status.
Right, and one of the things you reporters always have to keep in mind is a source isn't your friend, and they're being nice to you for their own advantage. I often think that reporters can't really be bought with dinners or gifts, but you can curry favor with them by giving them good story leads.
So if we acknowledge that what is suggested here between the relationship with the media and Petraeus is accurate, and from what you guys just described, are we thus not serving our readers and listeners well if we are allowing this kind of personal relationship to perhaps impact the kinds of stories we are writing? And is that unavoidable, or is it just simply human nature?
No, it's clearly avoidable and something you have to really work hard to prevent from happening. But it's something you have to be mindful of that can happen, especially with young reporters. But in this case, these guys were seasoned national quality reporters, and they're getting swayed by a general who...
Well, how do you deal with... You guys deal with your reporters one-to-one on a daily basis. And we're relatively small communities as opposed to national. If you know that a reporter of yours plays golf with the alderman in your town, is that a... Should that happen? And B, if you know that, are you going to have him not cover that alderman? Or do you warn your reporter, hey, I know you play golf with him, you're allowed to have your own friends, but you've got to treat this guy the way you treat anybody else?
Well, it is a small community, and reporters do socialize with some of their sources. That by itself is not automatically a bad thing. We certainly know that the reporters that have good sources are going to get the good stories. So there is a fine line between... between being professional and maintaining contact with a lot of people and being cordial with them so that they'll call you back. But you have to have the audacity to call them when they're misleading you and not to protect them when they're being criticized. And I think that I agree with Judy in that, you know, you have to kind of warn young people that this is a fine line and you can't step over it.
Right, and editors have to be there to keep reminding them that that line is there.
I like to tell my wife, who sometimes criticizes me about this, that I have no friends, and I'm not sure how much of that is because I'm an unlikable fellow or because when I was really doing this on a day-to-day basis, I just kept my distance, and I'm not sure that I overdid it, but I do wonder, to your point, you know, if you're saying that your reporters socialize with their sources, whether we have the right as editors and publishers to say, listen, be careful, A, and B, I'm sorry, I'm not going to allow you to cover this person because I know you're friendly with him or her.
Yeah, if someone is too close, they need to, if they don't on their own step aside, which a lot of people do, they recognize that they have a conflict because they're very good friends with this particular source. But if they don't recognize that, it's the editor's job to step in and establish that boundary.
But it is potentially, again, in small communities such as ours, relatively speaking, Mike works at a larger community, yours is a little bit less and mine is much less than you two. They are small communities and people sort of know on the street, as they say, if somebody is too close. And so the newspaper's credibility is at stake when people think they're not getting the real story because the reporter or the editor is too close to the source. I don't know whether you two guys are on any boards in your community.
No,
you're not. And is there a policy at your papers that say the editors and the reporters should not be on boards? nonprofit boards?
We don't, you know, where we are. How about that?
Yeah, we don't either. I have some reporters who do volunteer work. I have no problem with that, but they can't cover the agencies they volunteer for, but we're not on board.
Yeah, yeah. It's a tough line because people do have their own lives and they're allowed to have their own lives.
I mean, they go to, you know, they have a stake in the local schools.
Yeah.
And they go to meetings and they meet the people who, you know, who are parents of their kids' friends who are in positions of authority and you know, they have to... I guess underscoring the rules of ethics and being impartial is something we just can't do enough of.
Well, the other piece of the Petraeus story this week, or another, I wouldn't say the other, because there are apparently a whole string of them, but one that I think concerns us in the media and the public in general is uncovering this whole Petraeus business, the investigation delved into email and the kinds of things that most of us believe that we put on our computers and only we get to see. In a story in one of the pieces that crossed our desk, it says that what has happened as a result is that this is what civil libertarians have long warned about, that in policing the web for crime, espionage, and sabotage, government investigators will unavoidably invade the private lives of Americans. What say you guys?
Well, it's a reality, and you have to recognize, I think, in this society that if you put it on an email, it can be discovered. You know, and be very careful.
Yeah, in this case, if you call the FBI and you tell them that you're getting emails, they're going to come in and look at all your emails. It's amazing the number of emails that are involved in this case and how deep it went and how quickly it went. But that is the danger when you launch an investigation like that or when you call for help.
So to play Alan the protagonist, are you guys saying that you don't mind this? That this is just the way it is, and we're not against this kind of delving into private information when there is no cause necessarily?
I think there's going to be efforts to rein that in, but you know, when you start harping about national security, the Congress is reluctant to put constrictions on the FBI's authority to go in and look at anything they think that's going to be relevant to their efforts to, you know, protect the country.
Well, I don't know. It just seems to me that it leaves a leeway that is much too broad. I mean, let me look at it a different way. If one of your reporters, who is particularly technologically well endowed, I guess is a good way to put it, if they had the ability and they know how to get into people's emails, would you allow that to happen, or would you run stories based on that?
It's against the law.
It's against the law. That's the bottom line. Yeah.
So that would be a no.
Yeah, that would be a no. But I just want to get that on the record, Your Honor. This is the Media Project. I'm Ira Fussfeld with Mike Spain and Judy Patrick this week. In the wake of the election that you may have heard has taken place already, a lot of consternation on the part of the Republicans in particular, trying to determine what went wrong. But in particular, and as it relates to media, there was a lot of surprise, apparently, on the part of Republicans and conservatives. They didn't think the election was going to go that way because I would posit that there was so much attention by them to Fox News and to the right-wing talk radio people that they were not teed up that this might happen and, in fact, was likely to happen. And, you know, if you were within the Fox News echo chamber, all you heard was Dick Morris say it's going to be a landslide and Karl Rove say it was going to be a landslide. And I thought it was a great line from the conservative Republican speechwriter David Frum, who is calling this the conservative entertainment complex. And he said that the conservative entertainment complex lied to its listeners and readers. I don't think he was talking about print, more listeners. I guess the question is that a fair indictment of the conservative entertainment complex? And is there a similar kind of liberal entertainment complex as is represented by MSNBC?
Well, a lot has been written since the election about that sort of bizarre scene on Fox News.
The Karl Rove day.
Karl Rove refused to accept what even Fox News had established. And while the screen was blinking, Obama reelected, he was not accepting it. And they went and they brought out their numbers person, and he was debating with them why he didn't believe it was time to call Ohio. And once Ohio went, of course, then went the election. And, you know, I think their credibility now has been injured greatly. And people like, you know, Nate Silver, the blogger for The New York Times, who uses a scientific approach to reading the polls and predicting the probability based on historical perspective and on numbers, was right on the money. It turns out he's been vindicated. He was getting a lot of criticism from the right wing. But he turned out to be correct.
Mm-hmm.
So it has hurt their credibility, and perhaps it will hurt the financial viability of this conservative media complex that you're talking about.
Yeah, and kudos to Nate Silver for what he's been doing in terms of taking a mathematical look, a hard scientific look at what these polls do. So much of the media coverage is driven by polls during an election. And so it's important, especially right now, to look at what polls worked, what polls didn't work, and why, what kind of approaches all the different entities were using.
But let me play devil's advocate. We on this program forever have been denouncing Fox News for being the conservative voice and for not reporting fair and balanced, as is their rather cynical trademark. But now, a recent survey, I believe it was by Pew, said that the coverage of Romney by MSNBC and the amount of coverage of Romney by MSNBC was far greater and far more negative than was the negative comment of Obama on Fox.
Yeah, there's been some defenders of Fox. In fact, David Carr, you know, the media columnist in the New York Times this week, said when it came right down to it, they turned into news people on election night and they reported the facts as it was. So maybe they're closer to being able to be objective than MSNBC. You know, MSNBC makes no pretense that it's objective. I mean, their program hosts during the day and the evening are very open about their political opinion, and they're very biased towards the liberal agenda. But you know it. You know, they're not trying to hide it. They're not trying to portray it as just straight news, and maybe that's the difference. But Pew did find that they were more harsh on Romney than Fox was on.
But isn't whether it's the liberal MSNBC or the conservative Fox, their presence and what it is they do, is there simply are we simply saying, okay, there's a place for them in the media spectrum, or because they are so blatantly partisan to one side or the other, does that hurt those of us in the media, press and broadcast, who would like to feel that we're about as down the middle as we are supposed to be? In other words, it hurts all of our credibility.
You know, I think there's clearly a place for them because they're popular. They're well watched. The people want to listen to this to see what they have to say. But in this media marketplace, there's room for all different.
But look
kinds
what
of
happened
approaches.
With when Fox News was suggesting that the polls at favoring Obama were somehow biased, and the broader mainstream media is biased. When somebody, I see it on my site when people comment on our stories, that stories that we write are now being portrayed as inaccurate or biased because they're not.
They don't agree
they
with
don't
what
agree
it says.
With right. Yeah. So that has really permeated into the whole media landscape.
Well, there's a lot been said about the uncomfortableness that people at the network NBC have because of MSNBC, because there is some crossover, and people assume that the reporters on NBC are the same political bias as the hosts of these more liberal programs on MSNBC. So it's very difficult to separate themselves from it. And I think in general, people think that all media is biased because you have these two extremes, and it just ain't true.
You know, I'm sure we all get the calls from listeners or fans of Fox who will call our newspapers up and say, you are not reporting this correctly. You need to listen to Fox News more. The Associated Press has liberal bias.
Yeah, and that's a surprise. I didn't realize until a few months ago when people started telling me the AP is now considered to be liberal.
Right. And so in my newspaper, what we do is we engage these guys in conversation and say, listen, there are other places to get your information. Sure, if you enjoy Fox, listen to it, watch the shows, but also try to fact check what you're hearing and read our newspaper and realize that there are different people are coming from different places. In many ways, it's a good way to get people to analyze what they're hearing and be more judgmental about their sources.
Well, I just wish that using those two cable channels in particular, because they do both claim that their daytime programming is straight news and it's in their primetime evening coverage that they are showing their political leanings. I just wish that on O'Reilly or on Hannity or on Rachel Maddow, that somewhere on the screen where all those crawls are, there was a thing that said opinion or commentary or analysis. Much like in our papers, we identify what our editorial page is. I mean,
well,
we on the top.
I think
of
it's so obvious though when they're talking.
Well, but
I think
it's obvious to us.
Yeah.
I mean, but I think that the people who listen to this program are more intelligent than the average viewers and listeners because this, you know, that's the demographic of public radio. There's this vast world out there where people will watch a Sean Hannity and they'll think that they're watching the news.
Oh, that's very true.
And speaking of people who are straight shooters, what about Donald Trump? What about Donald Trump? glad that you asked. At what point in time?
What about Donald?
At what point in time are we? And I'll stick to the print press now. Are we going to stop using stories about Donald Trump when he just says stuff that's dumb?
Well, he is, if nothing else, the subject of ridicule by many. He's a sight gag. You know, it's like quoting Kim Kardashian. You know, we don't really believe her, but it's amusing.
Well, she's got nicer hair than he does.
Yeah. Much nicer hair. Yeah.
But, you know, we're at the point now when he opens his mouth and says something, I think you're right. Many of us will immediately say, well, this is nonsense. Yet newspapers are running these stories saying, here's what Donald Trump said today, and they're running them online. Should we just be ignoring? Why is this guy deserving ink more so than any other crank out there who says stuff that just doesn't make any sense?
Well, he throws money behind it. I mean, he was offering...
Not to us, he doesn't.
No, on the birther thing last year, you know, he was spending money and he was running a campaign to try to prove this ridiculous notion that Obama was not born in the United States. That had been disproven long ago. You know, all the proof is there that he was born in Hawaii. But he uses his money. He's a television celebrity. He has his show. His personality is the genre that he sells. He you know, you're fired is the big line. So he's a fairly big person in media. So when he says these kind of absurd things, it's interesting. I mean, right. You know, it's more than just anybody on the street saying
it. But it doesn't get a lot of ink either. It's always buried inside, in my paper, at least. It's a one-day...
It's like a people item. You know,
but
it's a paragraph.
The other thing is, if you don't report these things, you will get the Fox fans who will call up and say, you are not reporting.
Well,
this.
That's
this
very interesting you said that, because I agree with that, and that does happen. And so now, what should our response be as editors and publishers? And should we be editing the paper for the fear of the reaction we're going to get because we've done what we think is right?
I think what Judy was saying was that you just have to include varied points of views, and you have to, you know, in the limited space that we have in a print edition, we have to try to account for a vast array of what's going on in the world and in the country. And when Donald Trump says something kind of stupid, it's worth a paragraph.
Well, I wonder whether if we stop listening to him and stop reporting about him, whether he would just sort of go away, but probably
I think
he's
not. Fading away a little
he's
bit.
He's fading
now.
Away.
Yeah,
well,
yeah, yeah.
Well, in the last minute or so, we don't have a lot of time to get into it, but I commend everybody, if you have not yet read the restaurant review that was in the New York Times last week as we speak, reviewing a restaurant in Times Square that is owned or at least is named by Guy Fieri, the popular Food Channel personality. And it was a tremendous review in that it was brilliantly written. But boy, it was as harsh a review as I've ever read in newspapers, whether it's regarding food or movies or anything else. And it really has gotten a lot of attention. Did you guys see it?
It's a great read.
You really have to decide for yourself. But one of the things that I liked about it, beyond the way it was written, was that people were talking about it, and it was a newspaper review, and it was relevant, and people were saying, hey, did you see that in the paper today or online today? And
it
was provocative. That sort of thing still happens. And we've sort of run out of time, so amazingly, we've gotten through this one. Thank you all for being here. Mike Spain, Judy Patrick, I'm Ira Fussfeld, and join us again next week on The Media Project.
Off the record about some charming people I have known. For I meet politicians and grafters by the score. Killers plain and fancy, it's really quite a bore. Oh, newspaper men meet such interesting people. They know the lowdown, now it can be told. I'll tell you quite reliably off the record about some charming people I have known. For I meet politicians and grafters by the score. killers, plain and fancy. It's really quite a bore. Oh, newspapermen meet such interesting people. They wallow in corruption, crime, and gore. Ding-a-ling-ling, city desk. Pull the press, extra, extra, read all about it. It's a mess, meets the test. Oh, newspapermen meet such interesting people. It's wonderful to represent the press. Oh, newspapermen meet such interesting people. Their policy is an acrobatic thing. They claim to represent the common people.